Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the Screamcast. I'm your host, Sean DeRager, and with me, as always, is Brad Henderson.
Hi.
Today, we are talking about Night of the Comet. And I believe, Brad, this is one of your favorite releases by Scream Factory,
yes.
Right?
Yes, one of my favorites.
We have Bria Grant on the show to discuss Night of the Comet with us as well.
Yep. Hey, how's it going?
It's going great, and I believe actually you helped suggest this, which I appreciate.
Oh, yeah. Well, you sent me a list, and I didn't just come up with it out of nowhere, so I'm not gonna take credit for that.
Oh, come on.
Bria gets full credit.
Okay, good.
Just saying.
Bria, we want to thank you so much for coming on the show and talking to us about what you do.
You're welcome.
I first saw you in Heroes. That was my first experience with the Bria Grant experience.
Mm-hmm. That's what they call it.
Is it? Yeah.
That's what people call it, yeah.
I believe, was it seasons 1 and 2? I can't remember because I stopped watching halfway through 2.
No, you didn't because I'm in season 3. So I can't imagine unless you had only tuned in for...
Maybe we started 3. I can't remember. It's been a while.
Well, 2 was a weird one because it was half season because of the writer's strike.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So there was only like 10 or 12 episodes or something.
That's right.
Yep.
And then we abandoned the show. I'm sorry. We
it's
let
okay.
You
most
down.
People did. A lot of people did. It's okay. It's just my livelihood.
When did it end?
Season 4. It went through season 4.
Oh, season 4. Okay.
Yeah. But I died. I was only in season 3. I died at the end of season 3.
Spoiler alert.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Everybody dies on Heroes. That's what happened.
And then you were on Dexter for a short stint too, weren't you?
Yeah, I was on that for a hot minute.
As Ryan. Uh-huh. Right, Ryan Chambers or whatever.
That's correct. That is a good memory or IMDb page you have right in front of you.
No, if you listen to the past episodes, I'm totally anti-IMDb because I always call Sean out for that shit.
I get my hands slapped.
I can tell when people have just been looking at my IMDb page or my Wikipedia page is like really weird. And so they'll be like, you were in, and they name some weird movie. And I'm like, yeah, like they always say Max Payne because that's like on my Wikipedia page. But like I'm in that movie for all of like 2 seconds. So I can't.
Yeah, I don't remember that one at all.
No. I'm hard.
I mean, I remember Halloween, Rob Zombie's Halloween 2, of course.
Yeah, I was in that.
And you've done on a lot of TV. So how does that, what do you prefer, TV, movies, or, you know, they're both equivalent, both decent?
I mean, I guess the diplomatic answer is that I like doing both because I like working. But, like, I actually like TV better. Which most people don't, but I like the pace. It's much quicker pace. It's you know, you shoot an episode in a week or so and then you're kind of done, or you're there for like, you know, several episodes and then you kind of get to know people, and it's usually in LA, which I kind of like because then I don't have to like go stay at a hotel and somewhere else. I don't know. So I prefer TV. I like the turnaround too, because you shoot an episode and it's out in like a couple months, whereas with like movies, you know, you shoot one and it's like, oh, that'll be out in 3 years or
Yeah. Now, was Heroes your longest running that you were in, or was there
was
something
that a
else?
Pun? Was that a pun?
No.
I
would
run really fast.
No. Oh, well, here's the thing: is I've actually never watched Heroes.
Okay.
I was one of those people that just completely missed it, and I'm not a big TV person anyway. The only reason why I knew Dexter because, you know, a serial killer, so I was down for that. Sure. But yeah, was that your longest running stint was on Heroes?
Yeah, because I shot that for like 8 months, which is kind of like a lifetime in actors' world. You know, like we're happy if we get a job for like a week. So that was really awesome.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then what are you working on now? Aside from your podcast you're doing?
Yeah, I'm doing a podcast. I did one today. You know, I mean, so I wrote and directed this movie called Best Friends Forever that I should plug, that's out on DVD right this very second. So since doing that, I've been doing a lot more writing and stuff, and I'm just working on developing a few things for like web medium, the web as a medium. I don't know if I have to say that. For the web, and then also like maybe another feature or something. Not maybe. I am developing another feature. So I've been working on that kind of stuff. I mean, I've shot some stuff as an actor as well. I have this movie called Smothered that's coming out, I guess, with a bunch of sort of big, like Bill Moseley and I don't know, a bunch of famous horror icon folks.
Yeah.
That I think will be pretty fun. I shot that last year and it should be coming out soon.
Best Friends Forever was a Kickstarter, wasn't it?
It was like half Kickstarter, half investors. So we shot all of our principal photography on someone else's dime, and then a big investor, and then with all of our posts through Kickstarter. So like this week, we shot it. This is the problem with movies, like especially indies, that you shoot for less than. You shoot for on a shoestring, like you just don't have any money. And so we just now are getting our DVDs, and I'm just now I'm waiting for ours to arrive because we have this huge bulk order that we have to send out to all these Kickstarter people. So like this week is the week that I'm stuffing envelopes full of like Kickstarter DVDs.
Yeah, that's funny because I remember when that very first came on demand, I watched it and I sported the shit out of that, and then it was like fucking forever for the DVD, and then I saw that you retweeted something like the DVD came out, and I'm like, holy shit! So I had to purchase mine right away.
Oh well, thank you.
Everybody does the same.
That's so nice of you. Thank you. Yeah, I've gotten some really angry emails from Kickstarter people who are like, I gave to your project. It's almost been like 2 years now. Like two years ago or something. And I'm like, yeah, I'm sorry. Like I can burn you a DVD on my computer, but I feel like you won't be as thrilled with it as the actual DVD that's coming out that I promise will be great. But it just takes forever. Like, we signed a DVD deal like a year ago, but it's just not coming out.
It's the biz.
Yeah, I know.
I wanted to talk about Best Friends Forever because I just watched it the other night and I was super impressed with it because I had no idea, what to expect. But I loved it. I thought it was great.
Thanks. It's not quite a horror movie, so I'm glad you enjoyed it. Sometimes I feel like
we're multidimensional here on the screencast. I was just telling Brad today I own the Criterion version of Stagecoach. So
there you go. Oh, wow.
My horror cred may go down.
Yeah.
A little bit.
I find that horror, I think horror people are, I think that they're very well versed in like the horror world, but that doesn't mean they don't like other kind of movies. Yeah. And they are very open to like new interpretations of horror and new horror ideas. I think people are like, I think they're a lot like more genre bending than people give them credit for. So, or even I probably should include myself in that because I'm kind of a horror person, but thank you. And thanks for letting me plug the movie.
Oh yeah. We'll definitely be, because I was just happy that I finally got a DVD release. Cause I was actually going to email you when we were in conversation because before because you said it was March 25th it came out,
something the like street that
date. Yeah, and I was gonna ask, it was like, does it have distro, because we can totally pimp that out, but apparently obviously it did, so
yeah, it just takes a long time. We actually we premiered at Slam Dance and we got most of our deals then. It was like 2 years ago, but it just, you just get put on, you go to VOD, and that takes a long time. You're on VOD for, it takes 6 months to get on there, and then you're on there for 6 months. And then, it's just I don't know. The indie movie distribution model is broken. It's not good. It's not easy to do. If I had known better, I would have just been hired someone to help me publicize the movie and would have distributed it myself 100%, because it would have been worth what we've spent and the time we've spent trying to, get attention at giant distribution companies and stuff.
Yeah. That's what, that new platform VHX is really, really taking off and really, really doing well for, some indie filmmakers just doing their own thing.
Yeah. I literally had a conversation with, a little indie movie I did last year, and they were like, what are your thoughts on distribution? And I was like, and then told them to look into that platform. I thought that was a really cool idea.
Yeah. Yeah, way better than, VOD is cool, of course, but it's one of those things where a lot of these filmmakers are not making anything from it, basically. And no.
Because by the time you pay everybody back, and even your distribution company takes money off the top, and the person who brokered the deal, and you just end up, you don't make any money. I've not made one dime off of Best Friends Forever, and I probably never will. So
That's lame. We need to
at least get some credibility.
But I got to, you know, I got to direct a movie, and who else can say they get to do that? So,
well, it's good. It's competently directed. It's competently acted, and you can't say that for a lot of indie movies that I kind of take a chance on, because I have a hard time taking a chance on a movie that I know is an indie movie. I just tried watching one the other night, and I couldn't even get a half hour into it. Just
what was it? What was it called?
I can't say. But not I want to burn bridges, but
no.
I'll eventually end up. I'll watch it. I'll finish it. But you know, two Roman Cokes in, I wasn't feeling it.
Yeah, but, I could see that. Yeah.
But this was like, it was good. Like, I can tell there was a lot of heart put into the script. So you and Vera Mia, I can't, what's her last
name?
You
got it.
Meow.
Vera Meow.
Mm-hmm.
Meow like a cat.
both of you are credited as writing it. What was the inspiration for the story? Cause it's definitely a story about friends, but it happens to take place in a nuclear apocalypse.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. You know, we were writing a much more traditional horror script, and we just kind of like got overwhelmed, and like I don't know, like I love watching horror movies. I like being in them, but it's a little exhausting as an actress, just to be honest. Like, you just like, oh, I've just spent the last like 2 weeks of my life crying every day for like 14 hours a day, and like it's just like it just gets like a little exhausting. So we kind of dropped that, and I was driving through West Texas, and I called her, and I was like, what if we wrote an apocalyptic movie? Because we both love apocalyptic movies. And I was like, and it's like about someone driving through an area, and they like, the apocalypse has started happening, and they have like no idea. And that was sort of the idea. Because when you're out there, if, I don't know if you've ever driven through West Texas,
oh,
but
yeah.
It's like,
I used to tour with a band. I drove the bus every now and then, and I drove all the way through Texas.
Exactly. What was the band?
They were a Christian rock band called Pillar.
I know Pillar. I'm very familiar. I saw them several times.
You're lying to me.
No, I'm not. No, I'm not. I grew up in East Texas. There's like not a lot of music, and we were, and my brother and I were religious at the time, and we would go and watch like Christian rock and Christian punk rock a lot.
Wow. I was probably backstage.
Probably were. So, you know, West Texas is desolate. So that was kind of the inspiration, was being in West Texas, which is where we ended up shooting the movie.
Nice.
Yeah.
Did you draw, like, as far as the friendship angle, did you draw a lot from kind of personal experience, or, you know, because it, like I said, the heart behind this movie was, you know, you can just kind of feel that you, either that or you're acting really amazing, but you can tell that there was a definite,
How about
you know,
if we just say both?
Both. Yeah, there both.
No, I mean, Vera and I are friends outside of the movie. We haven't been friends that long. We've been friends for a couple of years. But I think there's not a lot of movies about female friendship, and and specifically like how intense female friendship can get, especially in like your early mid-20s, you kind of like, I create a lot of bonds with people who I'm still super duper close to. And yeah, I fight with them like they're like my, like our fights are blowout fights, like with my boyfriend. Like, we have like breakups. We have like massive, you know, angry moments with each other, or, you know, things we hide from each other. And like, it's just, it's like being in a relationship with a boyfriend sometimes. And so that was something we kind of wanted to explore. Because if you try to find movies about female friendship, let me tell you, there's like three. Like, I was like, I'm going to do research, and like, there's like three of them. Not really. There is like five that I could find that are like of any sort of decent size. So I don't know. It was something, yeah, definitely pulled on my real life like experiences with that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But I'm also a great actor.
Yes. Also, of course. I did appreciate that there was a character named Sean in the movie.
Okay.
However, he turns out to be a douchebag, but that's okay. Sure.
No, that's usual. That's
is it usual?
Yeah, but everybody that had that name, Sean, is kind of a douchebag. But it has to be, you know, S-E-A-N.
God damn it.
Yeah.
But I also wanted to ask you, did you have, like, was there some scenario involving hipsters that gave you, you know, the fuel to poke a stick at the hipsters in the film?
No, I mean, I did at the time live in Silver Lake, which is kind of the hipstery part of Los Angeles. So I think that like making fun of hipsters was funny to us, you know, so we were like, let's give one a guitar, and like, you know, he just always has it for no reason. And but those like roles, I mean, the role, it's the hipsters are Alex and Alex and Kit, and then the role of Sean is Sean, and they're all played by, they're all named after themselves because they were written for those guys. So those guys are really not hipsters. Well, mm-hmm. Kit's kind of a hipster. Kit is kind of a hipster. He's on Mad Men, and he kind of like looks like he would be on Mad Men like all the time. But I think like they're all kind of like written for those guys, and like because we thought it would be funny. But the Alex and Alex aren't really hipsters at all.
Well, they were fun. I laughed when you know, you kind of get it, but when then you say that you're being attacked by hipsters or something like that, I got a laugh out of that.
Oh, good. Very good.
So I guess it worked its magic.
Good.
It did. I'm just glad you listened to me, Sean. You should always trust me.
Well.
Always.
You broke the trust after recommending a couple other movies.
Well, that's okay. Oh, my gosh. So I recommended one bad movie out of 50. Give me a fucking break.
So the similarities between Night of the Comets, which we're going to talk about today, Best Friends Forever were pretty fun. Did you write it with kind of Night of the Comet in the background, like in your mind, or was this just a happy coincidence?
No, I mean, it definitely inspired the movie. It's one of my favorite. It's literally one of my favorite movies. Vera was a big fan of the movie too. So, you know, because that movie has like, it treats the apocalypse with a lot of levity, which I feel like we did as well for a long time in the movie. Obviously ours gets dark and that one gets sort of dark at certain points. But like, I think that the fun part of it, the part where it's like sort of just like girls having a good time, like we definitely drew on that quite a bit.
Yeah, no, the relationships, because in both, because I know that whenever you said let's do, you know, Night of the Comet, it like I didn't even think about it prior to that. It just like a light bulb went on. I'm like, holy shit, no, that's why you would pick it. Like, why I totally see that now. Yeah. It's fun because, I mean, it's still that kind of, because like you said, like, the female relationship between the two, even though these girls are sisters in that, which is a little bit different, but they don't feel like they're sisters.
Yeah.
And that's one thing. But, I mean, there's always that sister, like that sisterhood type feel. And I definitely got that with Best Friends Forever as well. Because, I mean, there's that time where, you know, you just, they don't know about the apocalypse, and like, you know, it's just like the preventing from telling them, right? You know, it's just like watching out for them as much as they possibly can, waiting for that right moment. I don't know, it's just those types of things are important to me, even though it's like, you know, a small plot point. It's just there's a lot of care between the characters with that type of situation. I mean, you're just protecting, you know, your loved ones or, you know, your friend or whatever.
Yeah, and that was something we talked about a lot, actually, about, like, I mean, whether or not that makes you a bad person if you don't tell the person that you know there's this horrible thing that's happened, like, what's the good time for that? And, like, yeah, we talked about that a lot. And, like, you know, the thing that, you know, this movie, like Night of the Comet, kind of makes you think about is, like, what would you do in this situation? Like, what, like, you know, throwing yourself into that situation, these like, crazy unique situations, you kind of figure out who, like, who's important to you, what relationships are important to you, and like what's worth saving.
Yeah. And it's just in any situation like that, I mean, everybody has, you know, between family members and friends, certain friends can take the truth, certain ones can't. So, I mean, so it's just people are fragile, and, you know, telling them a little bit of the truth can really kill them and hurt them. And other people can just, you can totally flat out be honest. And I mean, it just shows because you're shielding them, you're protecting them. And I thought that was, even with Night of the Comet and Best Friends Forever, there's very similarities of protecting one another. Even if it is a comedy, you know, there's, right. I don't know. Anyways, yeah. Protect your family.
I would recommend these as a double feature for sure.
Oh, yeah. That's a great double feature.
Yeah, that would work. I
agree. Directing this, was this a huge kind of step for you to kind of say, I'm going to direct a movie? Do you think you would do it again? How was the experience?
Honestly, like, I didn't like directing very much. Sorry, my headphones keep popping out. Okay, there we go. I I'm yet to decide whether or not I would do it again. Mm-hmm. I mean, the further I get away from the experience, the more I'm like, oh yeah, I'd totally do that again. It was a lot because we were shooting on location in the middle of Texas, in the middle of nowhere. I was acting as the lead in the movie as well as, directing it and, you know, helping produce. And it was a lot to do on a budget, you know, like, I mean, I think if I had like a lot of money or like, you know, like 20 more people around me or something like that, it would have been a much more, enjoyable experience.
Yeah.
But yeah. It wasn't, you know, it was such a weird thing. It wasn't something that I was like, I've always wanted to direct. Like, I've always like kind of wondered about it, but I've never been like that interested in actually doing it. But we had a director team signed on to do it who fell out, and we already had the money. And so we kind of had to go. And it was like either find another director who's willing to work for almost no money or do it myself, kind of. So it just felt like an easy slot to do, to place to slot myself in.
Have you had past experiences in directing at all? Like, you know,
no.
shorts or anything like that?
No. So I'm really crazy. It was really crazy. I mean, my theory was, I was like, I've spent a lot of time on sets. Like, I've spent like probably more time on sets than like the average first time director, like, to, you know, unless they've done a ton of like behind the scenes work or whatever. So I know what a set looks like. I know how it works. And so I read a bunch of books on directing, and then I knew what I wanted it to look like, and I knew the story really well. So I don't know. For me, it was, I mean, and this is, you know, a total weird actor thing, but like, one of the reasons I like being on a set is because I get to collaborate with people, and I get to sort of like help other people achieve their vision. And I like that. I like the collaboration part. As a director, I had a lot more trouble with it because I felt like since my voice was the final say, I didn't get to do as much collaborating. It was more like, do you like this? And it was constantly like me making these decisions for this bigger picture, which is fine. But like, I didn't get the joy that I get out of like helping create something. I know that doesn't, that may not make any sense at all.
No, it does. It does make sense because, you know, it's instead of, you don't have anybody to like turn to and just like, you know, it all comes to you at the final say, and you're the one that's putting it out there without, you know, because you can do a scene and you can see, you know, the reaction from, you know, crew, the director, and have that fulfillment. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get the fulfillment until kind of later on.
Right.
And see if it actually all went the way that you thought it would. I mean, especially if you're doing this for the first time.
Exactly. And it's like, you know, and you end up, and for me, I'm not a person who fighting person, and I'm not even a person who feels like the need to defend myself very often. So which is really hard as a director. You basically have to constantly defend your choices when, you know, you have producers, you have people involved in making the movie, and you have to say, no, I don't like that, and here's why, you know. And that's just like, I'm just like not interested there. I want it like to do it my way, and everybody says yes, or I don't want to, like, I don't want to be in charge. That sounds like totally selfish, but I mean, I'm an actor, so I sort of am. It's kind of how I learned to act on a set.
Do you think you would try directing without acting, trying to just take on just the director role, or is it still kind of?
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be a lot easier, and it wouldn't be easy, but it would be definitely much easier, and it would be, I think, you know, take one of the three out of the equation, writing, directing, or acting, and I would have a much better time, because I want to, you know, as a director, I wouldn't mind helping interpret someone else's writing. Or as a, you know, maybe act and write. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, just the combination of the three just felt like it was the Bria Grant show. And I kind of got tired of it.
Yeah, that's understandable. Well, for a first-time director thing, I mean, definitely, I recommend everyone, you know, check out Best Friends Forever. It's definitely worth watching.
I shouldn't talk so much shit and be like, oh, directing sucks, because then no one wants to buy the movie. But
no, you're being honest, but it's good, and that's, you know, I feel like, yeah, you guys turned in a good product.
It's your first attempt, and, you know, the conditions, and of course the budget, you know, because that's why I wanted to bring up the Kickstarter thing, because you're not having, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars thrown at you just to do a movie. Like, you literally had to work for it. You know, you're the lead, basically, in it, you know, one of the, you know, two leads, and, you know, you co-wrote it. And you're directing by yourself. I mean, that's a pretty big fucking accomplishment. And I think anybody should want to see that alone, just to see how the person does, whether they, you know, doing an outstanding job, completely fuck it up, or it's just mediocre. You know, and it's that I mean, that's a lot of reasons when a first time director comes aboard, or maybe an actor becomes a director, or a writer becomes a director. Yeah, I want to see it because I want to see what they're going to do. Yeah. I'm excited to see if they can do it. Yeah. And, you know, when I heard that you were directing a movie, I was like, man, I definitely want to see if she can actually pull this off. Like, this is going to be exciting. And you did. Yeah, and well, definitely impressed us.
Yes. Thanks. I want to get to talking about Nut of the Comet here very shortly, but I do want to spend some time on Mystic Party. I was unaware that were a clairvoyant.
Oh, yeah. On the Mystic Party show, I'm a psychic. I would hate to, disparage any other actual psychics or people who believe they're actually psychics out there. And so I play a psychic on a weekly podcast.
No, I, because I had no idea you were doing a podcast, and I tuned in for the first episode, and I didn't know anything about it, and it started, and like, you know, I didn't get it at first. I was like, what the fuck is going on? Like, obviously, there, you know, she doesn't really think she's a psychic, or she does, and it's a hidden thing that I don't know about her. Because, you know, sometimes that pops up. Like, you know somebody personally, or you know somebody through, you know, social media. And then, like, they have this kind of this other side of them that you did not know. And it started as like, no, this is definitely a joke. And it was funny because your show is self-aware, and I think that's what makes it definitely different. And the Chupacabra story that I tweeted about, because it was funny because after I listened to that, I saw like on Facebook, on Twitter, everybody's talking about this, and I kept referencing your show to everybody. I was like,
oh, yeah, it's good.
They keep on that shit on Mystic Party. And people are like, what the fuck's Mystic Party? And I'm like, you need to listen. They're fucking psychics.
Yeah, that's good.
I haven't listened to the third episode yet. There is a third episode up, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Third one is up with, Sandeep Parikh, who was on The Guild, and he's actually, a really good writer director as well. He directed a series called The Legend of Neil. And he's our third week's episode. And then the fourth week is going to come out very soon. And that's, Zach Perlman, who is a comedian, and, he's been in a bunch of movies, and he's very talented. And it's been a weird adventure so far. I mean, it's my brother and I, and we like,
yeah,
someone told us when we were getting our friend Jonathan Spies to do the art for it, I explained to him what it was, and he was like, man, when you two get together, you just make such weird stuff. You guys go so weird. We're like, yeah. Like, is it that weird? There's something about when my brother and I get together where we have the exact same humor that we think what we're doing is really, really normal, but it ends up not being totally normal. So yeah. And I also didn't want to be on a podcast. I didn't want to play myself on a podcast. I didn't want to like, I'm not really that knowledgeable about many things, but I do know a lot about, science fiction and horror and basically like tropes within those genres, and so does Zane, and so together we could talk about them obviously every single week and have
it's hilarious
about.
And I like how like monotone his voice is the whole entire, it's just this one level,
that's how he talks.
Yeah. And it's
I would be wrong to say he talks with any sort of weird, we could not be more different people. Like, I have a ton of energy and obviously a high pitched voice, and I'm very bubbly. And he is like the most monotone, dry person you will ever meet.
Oh, okay. So that's just him.
That's just his voice.
I totally thought that was a character. I was like, this guy just, he will not, like, you can tell like when he's smiling, you know, but for the most part, it's just that same voice. And like,
yeah, I mean, I guess he puts it on a little bit for the show, but it definitely is his voice. And there's not a friend of mine that doesn't have an impression of him, because he has an accent and he has this slow, deep voice. So like, everybody has a nice impression of Zane.
Yeah. Now, is the show scripted at all? Like, are there just notes that you're going to talk about? Because it sounds like there's a lot that there is some improv in there because, I don't know, because like you said, it's your brother and yourself, so you kind of know each other's humor and where you're going.
Yeah.
How much of it is scripted? Do you really just have like, hey, we're going to tag this and we're just going to get into it some way or another?
Yeah, that's it. That's all we have. Obviously, like, we pull news stories ahead of time, but I don't know what his are and he doesn't know what mine are. We have the guests come and we know what their problem is ahead of time because we have pre-recorded callers calling in because we have callers. But the show is not live. So we pre-record those, but it's works okay. Sometimes it doesn't work sometimes because we have guests who go off the rails from, you know, usually it's like a one sentence, like, this week is Sandeep's and he falls in love with his operating system. He wants to break up with his operating system. So it's like very similar to the plot of Her. And that's all we gave him, you know, we're like, and we pretty much only, all of our guests are improvisers and have improvised in some way or another. And my brother and I have both trained in improv. So I guess the whole show is improvised. I mean, we have like, obviously like beats that we know we have to play, like, you know, hey, what's your problem? And hey, we have some recordings, but other than that, it's just us making jokes.
When I first listened to it, like I said, I completely didn't, with, I think it like 15, 20 minutes in, it didn't click. And then after, like, I was thinking like, okay, like Bria's definitely not, I was like, keep on thinking to myself, she is not a psychic. Like, does she think she's a psychic? No, she doesn't. She doesn't seem like the type of person, but maybe she is. And I'm like, this seems like a joke. And I was like, I guess that's good because it kept me thinking. And then finally, like definitely during the second episode, that's when it really, really hit. And I listened on my way when I was going to see Captain America. I listened on the way there and I was just cracking up.
Oh, great. Oh, good. So. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's so weird. You're the second podcast I've gone on to talk about it. And I'm like, do I talk about it like I really believe the show, or do I talk about it like it's not real? I don't know. Like, I haven't even figured out how to talk about it yet. So it's because
it's odd because it's, you know, it's to the point where you maybe don't want to, you know, give away the joke.
Yeah.
You know? But it's like, you know, when people ask you, of course, unless you had that persona and that, you know, you did build a character and you could be on that character on like podcasts or interviews or something like that. Right. You know, because even musicians do that, you know, is they want to do a side project. So they dress up, put a mask on and they pretend that they're somebody else. But you don't want to do all that. I mean, it's just, I don't know. I think people will understand and get the joke after the first episode, at least. And if you're going into it with explanation like we just did, I think that people will enjoy it.
Or okay, we can just delete the past 5 minutes and
I can just talk about how I'm a psychic.
Right.
Yeah, that's true too.
Well, let's go ahead and take a quick break here, and then we'll come back and talk about Night of the Comet. This week's band is on Tiny Engines Records, and they're called Mannequin Pussy, which I always get a kick out of the name. I don't know.
You would, Sean.
Their album is out right now. It's called Gypsy Pervert, and the song I'm going to play for you right now is called Clue Juice. You're listening to The Screamcast.
Yeah.
That was New York City's Mannequin Pussy with the song Clue Juice. It's off their album Gypsy Pervert, which is out on Tiny Engines Records right now. They'll be releasing a vinyl version of this album sometime this summer.
What's Clue Juice?
I have no idea. No idea.
I have something in my head. I don't want to say it.
Yeah.
I don't want to, you know, if Mannequin Pussy actually listens to this, I don't want to be wrong.
You should call him up.
Yeah.
I'll ask him.
I'm going to do that.
So if you want to know more about these bands, this band, you can go to thegeekcouch.com. I got my music podcast over there, and I will be posting news as it comes out. So you should be able to find the release date on the vinyl when that posts over there. Shameless plug. Sorry, everybody.
Well, I think maybe when you ask Bria, maybe she can tell us since she's psychic.
Yeah.
Wait, what was the question? What did we do?
No, I'm just saying that I'm just going to go to you for information now, because obviously, since you can, you know, tell me these types of things.
Oh, yeah. You can ask me anything. I'm really, you know, I am psychic, so. But I like to keep people guessing, so you can just. You know, you should make your own assumptions, and then, like, later I'll tell you if they're right or wrong.
See, you're going to do that, and you're going to make me believe you're psychic again.
Mm-hmm,
yep.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like a
plan.
Keep
them guessing. I like this.
All right, well, today we're talking about the 1984 movie Night of the Comet.
1984 for real? Like, man, real. I didn't know that movie's that old.
Yeah, 1984, directed by Tom Urbehart.
Yeah, he directed Soul Survivor.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
The airplane crash thing.
Mm-hmm.
So this movie is starring one of my favorite actresses from The Last Starfighter, Katharine Mary Stewart.
Yeah, she's very good.
She's awesome.
Very cute.
And I like that she gets a chance to play some video games in this movie.
Mm-hmm. She's also in Weekend at Bernie's.
Yes.
If you remember that.
I was never a fan of Weekend at Bernie's. And I
what?
I always get shit for it. Don't do it. Don't do it to me.
I'll be perfectly honest with you. When I was younger, I liked Weekend at Bernie's 2 better. That was, like, my favorite.
How about now? Do you still like it?
I have not seen it in a really long time. Probably not since, like, 6th grade.
What I like to do, for starters here, go around and see, you know, what everyone's experience with this movie is. And since this movie did help inspire Best Friends Forever, Bria, what else? I mean, when did you first see Night of the Comet?
Obviously I was not old enough to watch it when it came out. So it was recently, I would say like in college or sometime around then, but I couldn't tell you when. And then, I revisited it. I watched it again, at some point when we were like talking about Best Friends Forever, cause we hadn't really written much. And that was when it sort of started inspiring me for that. Because I love the, like, I love the idea of the city being empty. Like, I really some days wish I would wake up and everyone would be gone from Los Angeles. Like, you could just, like, run around the streets and go to the mall and, like, do all the things you want to do, and there's not people around to bother you.
Goddamn yeah. People.
It's kind of my dream.
I wish that shit happened in Florida.
Brad, how about you? What's your experience with the Night of the Comet?
Well, at first, when I first heard about it, I was a little older, I guess, maybe like 10 or 11, I guess. And it was one of those things I read about, and I'm like, oh, shit, this is like a kick-ass zombie movie. And I rented it, and I'm like, this is not a kick-ass zombie movie. and I honestly, I don't think I even liked it when I first viewed it, because I thought it was something else. I was young, and I was really into, you know, brutal horror films or something really gory. I mean, this does have its, you know, gore, but it wasn't what I wanted to see.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it was like a few years later, once like the cult thing started happening and people mentioned it, and I'm like, oh, okay, you know, I'll eventually get it. So I do that with a lot of movies. You know, I didn't like them when I was younger, watch them when I'm a little older, and I fell in love with them. I completely fell in love with it because Katharine Mary Stewart kind of like then, you know, stole my heart. And I tracked everything she was in, like, you know, Night Flyers and, you know, she's in Dudes, of course, Last Starfighter. But there's a few like really underrated things that she was in. And it just clicked because it was I felt that Kelly Maroney and Katharine Mary Stewart were kind of like kind of like Corey Haim and Corey Feldman in a way, mm-hmm. but they never got to do those. Like, cause I mean, of course, Feldman and Haim did all those movies together. It felt like these girls could go on and do that. Mm-hmm. Like they could have been like a duo and done mm-hmm. countless comedies. And it sucked because they were in this movie together. And, I think they were in something else together after that, but I mean, it didn't take off, and it could have been like a Haim and Feldman thing, which would have been because those kids were great together, and it would have been nice to see these two. But yeah, ever since then, it was just always, it's just something I always adored. It's like kind of like, I feel like it's a girly movie and guys do like it, but it feels like a girly movie. And I have this hidden thing about me that I really like girly movies sometimes. So it's, Night of the Comet always, makes me smile, especially the mall scene when they're trying on all the clothes and girls just want to have fun, starts playing.
It's an amazing scene.
Yeah.
Well, this is one of those movies that I'd heard of, but I'd never really paid attention to until Scream Factory announced that they were releasing it. And I was really excited to check it out. So I saw this for the first time ever when I got the Blu-ray.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so you're completely into it.
Yeah, just totally fresh with this movie. And then when I saw that Catherine, you know, Mary Stewart was the lead, I got immediately was hooked. Because I mean, I watched The Last Starfighter like almost every weekend. It was like one of those movies I watched all the time. And I never really followed her career, I guess, because as a kid, you don't really know who's in what. You just know, oh, that's the girl from The Last Starfighter, right?
Well, you're supposed to notice girls like that. There's well, certain girls that you really like, you know, Alyssa Milano, you know, Catherine Mary Stewart. I always mention Juliet Cummings. Like, I don't know. That's one that you're supposed to pay attention to.
You know, I missed a lot, okay? I had some issues. I may go to therapy. We'll see what happens. but you know, I was really excited to see that she was the lead in this movie. And then, like you said, you know, Kelly Maroney, their chemistry was fantastic. And I had a really fun time with this movie. And I also noticed that I'm going to add this to my Christmas movie list.
Oh, yeah, totally.
This is a Christmas movie.
I kind of forgot about that until I just rewatched it this week because I knew we were going to talk about it. And I had forgotten it was a Christmas movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it takes place like a couple weeks before Christmas. I mean, there's a few things. There's like Christmas trees like in every scene almost, it seems, that are inside. You know, of course, anything. There's no like Christmas lights, you know, exterior shots, you know, of downtown. But that I can remember anyway. But there's a lot of Christmas trees in the movie.
Yeah, but they never address why that's important. Like it never actually comes up as like a thing except they play Christmas music.
No.
Yeah, it's like when she pulls up next to the like Mercedes Benz, there's like Jingle Bells or something playing.
And that's like strangely eerie. Like that scene's great because, you know, there's no one in the car, no one around, and yet this festive music, you know, is playing on the car stereo.
Yeah. There's a lot of creepy moments in that movie. Yeah. And, you know, it even though it is, you know, all above a comedy for the most part. But yeah, there's a lot of scenes that are just very awkward and, you know, makes you, and it's funny because, you know, when I was younger, I would always like dream, like I would see like Dawn of the Dead and I'm like, man, I wish zombies would just kill everybody and I could, you know, go to the mall and just shoot zombies all day. And it was kind of like this guy thing. And it was nice to see the tables turn and it's like, you know, girls do it, and they kind of do the same thing. You know, they get MAC-10s and they protect themselves, and then they fucking go to the mall to shop. You know, that's what I would do. I would go shopping. Would you go shopping?
Yeah.
I would take Bria instead because she would be able to like tell me like the future and shit.
Yeah, that's true. Or I'd just tell you like what clothes are stylish or something.
Yeah, that would
work. I wouldn't be fun in the mall.
Yeah, you seem like you'd be a drag. I'm just saying.
those scenes that they shoot in like the empty downtown streets of LA, it weirds me out because I'm like, man, they had to empty the streets of LA to shoot these shots, which I can only imagine it must have been a different world as far as permits go, because I don't think anybody would be able to do that now unless you're doing like a huge Tom Cruise movie.
Actually, they put that on the actual movie. They filmed those scenes on Christmas Day.
Oh.
Because they didn't have money to do that. They filmed a lot of those big shots of like downtown. They filmed those on Christmas Day.
Oh my God, that's amazing. You know, because we actually shot a lot of Best Friends Forever on Thanksgiving. All of our downtown Austin stuff we shot on Thanksgiving night. That's cool. So that way we knew nobody would be there.
Yeah, I thought that was very interesting. Because the first thing I was like, how the fuck do they get like L.A. or wherever they, to completely be bare. I mean, that's a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
Such a big, but yeah, that's the reason why they were stating on the, like special features that it was very odd because it was kind of creepy and eerie to be there and there's no one on the streets. So yeah, it kind of felt like they were in the apocalypse a little bit.
Yeah.
That's so weird.
I suppose I should let everyone know if you haven't seen this movie, we'll do a quick little rundown of the plot. You know, it's called Night of the Comet. So, of course, a comet is going by the Earth, and everyone's excited about it. And when that comet passes over, everyone outside watching pretty much turns into a pile of red dust. And then, for some reason, there are some zombies.
Those are people who are, like, about to be turning into dust. They're, like, becoming dust.
Yeah.
So, basically...
They're the infected or whatever.
Yeah. So, basically, we got two sisters who look nothing alike. But they still seem a lot like sisters, though.
No, yeah, they meld so well.
Yeah,
yeah.
They're kind of left on their own and need to kind of deal with the situation they put in. They've been put in, and they end up at a radio station.
Yeah, and she throws away the Valley Girl soundtrack when she's going through records.
Why would you throw away the Valley Girl soundtrack? That's
it
the great
drives
soundtrack.
It drives me crazy. Yeah, she's standing there, and she throws it behind her, and I'm like, I lunge for the television. I'm like, no, what are you doing? Do that, Kelly Maroney.
It's like the best Nicolas Cage ever.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
And a fantastic soundtrack.
I mean, Valley Girl's amazing, but best Nicolas Cage movie? Have you seen Con Air, Sean?
It's better than Con Air.
I don't know if you've seen Con Air.
It's a better performance than Con Air. I'm putting that out there right now.
Put the bunny down. That's... Sean, he says that, Sean.
I know he says that. I know.
Okay, whatever.
You know, I didn't get to watch this before the podcast, so I'm trying to remember back when I saw it. Did we see more zombies than we, other than just that one?
No, I mean, she's followed by the police officers, and we have that, but that's mostly a dream. There's a few others, because I know towards the end, well, not spoiler, but they see that more people are turning into, I guess maybe you call them zombies. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely more.
And then the guys in there are people, like, on their way, like, somewhere in between turning...
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, the mall like, too.
The mall, yeah. Okay. There's the guys in the mall. There's a couple of other, and then Hector has some issues. Hector is the guy.
It's coming back to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because when they're in the actually that's the Galleria, right? The Sherman Oaks Galleria that they're in.
Oh, is it? Is it? I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's where they film they film a fuck ton of movies in there, Terminator. Terminator 2 was filmed in there. The Chopping Mall.
Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
That Sims Ridgemont, yeah. I think Back to the Future. What was it? Two's where they go in. I don't remember. I'm not a big fan of
Two's the one where they're
the
future.
In
the future, and it's... I don't like two.
Wait, the Sherman Oaks Galleria, the one with the arc light in it? Do you guys know? Which one is the Sherman Oaks Galleria? There's like two malls over there in Sherman Oaks.
Well, it's the oldest one that was remodeled, like in 2000, I think. Like 2003.
Okay.
Like it looks nothing alike. It has it had like the elevator that was like a glass bubble.
Okay.
Yeah, because I mean
the arc light.
It might be. It's. I mean, I think it was like build. When was that built? I can't remember doing that because there was always one thing that I. That was one of the things I discovered on myself, like way before the internet and IMDb. I was like, man, all these fucking malls look alike. You know, the Chopping Mall and Commando and Terminator 2. It was mostly Commando and Chopping Malls where I pieced it together. I was like, those are the same goddamn elevators, you know.
That's
but
so
yeah, there's a lot of movies that were filmed there, and Night of the Comet was one of them as well, as I believe so.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So, you know, don't quote me on that, but I think it is.
Well, I mean, I think it's a great little film. You keep saying that it's a comedy. Like, I don't know if I took away that it's actually a full on comedy. You know what I mean?
I mean, no, I mean, there's a lot of seriousness to it, but I mean, I think end all be all, it's a comedy to me because I laugh and I giggle more than anything.
Right.
So, you know, if you know who I am deep down, Sean, when I laugh and I giggle, that's very important because I'm not a laugher or a giggler.
Right.
Would you call it, Sean? What do you think it is?
I don't know. I mean, it's almost like an 80s teen movie. Like, I don't know. Cause it's not like it's going out of its way to be hilarious, you know, like,
right.
But it's also not going out of its way to be super serious. It just, to me, it comes across as like an 80s kind of sci-fi adventure type movie. Yeah, you know, it's
a cute movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's not scary.
No.
No, of course not.
It's apocalyptic, you know. Yeah. I think it has that, you know, you can always call it an apocalyptic movie, but it's kind of an 80s teen, almost mm-hmm. coming
it's,
of age.
It's definitely like a genre mashup, though. I mean, there's a lot of shit in there that, you know, it's completely different. I think that's, again, why it probably didn't do well. Because people were probably wanting, like when I was younger, I wanted a zombie movie and people didn't get that. And I just don't think people understood what they were watching until years later. And I mean, I know that this movie now is a big cult favorite. So I'm glad it found its audience for sure years later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how well it did when it came out.
Probably not very well.
No. Well, according to Wikipedia, of course, it had a $3 million budget and it pulled
That's
in 14.
Lot.
So,
wow.
It's estimated. I don't know what that means. I don't know what that means. I can't read numbers. I don't know about box office crap.
But I think because of the genre crossing, I think it didn't like make itself into, it wasn't Dawn of the Dead. It wasn't like one of those that like stuck with everyone that everybody talks about. So I feel like there's been some rediscovery of it in the last few years.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it definitely fell off the grid whenever it was released because I just don't see people actually getting that, especially during that time, how, you know, prevalent, you know, horror films were and, you know, how scary. It's just, it didn't fit well with the rest.
Yeah.
So,
it's
I mean,
a good movie,
I guess,
though.
Yeah, no, I think if it marketed itself as kind of a teen comedy, it would have done better. But, you know, it probably prevented girls from going to see it because it was a zombie movie. But then when the guys went to go see it, it wasn't a zombie movie.
Right.
I think that kind of fell into place a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the poster, they definitely try to market it as some sort of kind of sci-fi zombie type
movie. Well, yeah, you would. I mean, marketing is, I mean, you want people to go see your movie.
Yeah.
It's just, sometimes you have to trick people into watching your movie because if you tell them what it is, they might not want to see it.
Yeah.
So you got to try to appeal to all audiences. But
I met Kelly Maroney at a restaurant, just so you guys know.
Oh, wow.
I feel like that's an important bit of information. I did.
I'm jealous.
I was very excited to meet her, and I was like, I love Night of the Comet. She was very nice. I do not think she was very interested in talking to me about Night of the Comet, but she was really super nice.
I listened to the commentary, and they seemed, I mean, it was a very fun commentary. It was with both her, you know, Kelly Maroney and Catherine Mary Stewart were on the commentary. I believe this was being... It was being moderated by somebody who actually did a good job. I know a couple shows ago that I kind of gave some shit to the commentator or the mediator or whatever the heck you call it. And this guy was good. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that about Kelly Maroney because a while ago, I don't know, a year or so, I was watching Night of the Comet. I found out she was on Twitter. So I nicely tweeted. I said, oh, man, it would have been fun, you know, to see you. And I mentioned that Corey Haim Feldman thing. I was like, it would be super cool, like, you know, have you guys together. You guys could have been like, you know, a female Haim and Feldman. And she goes, well, just for your information, we have careers in 2014. And I'm like, what? I was like, no, Kelly, stop. That's not what I meant. Like, I'm not saying you don't have a career. I'm just saying back then, like, it would have been cool to see you guys together. And she responded with, again, like, we still have careers. And I'm like, I know. Why aren't you understanding me?
Way to insult Cameron.
I don't know if I should put her in my next movie. I feel like I should call her up, you know?
Yeah, I would. She'd probably do it.
I don't know if she would do it, but I would like to work with her.
Yeah.
I actually wasn't... I didn't know if she was still acting, but I did look up Catherine...
Mary Stewart.
Mary Stewart. And she has, like, a very updated website and, like, all sorts of stuff. She's working, like, a ton.
Wow.
Yeah. Is there anybody that you, like... Like, whenever you were making Best Friends Forever, was there anything that you were like, I'm going to try to work this person, or that maybe you wanted to and you just, you know, of course, due to budgetary reasons, you couldn't get them. But is there anybody like you would really, even like acting, somebody else directing, of course, is there anybody that you would love to be beside on screen?
I don't know. I mean, yeah. I mean, there's probably tons of people. I don't know if I could like name someone off the top of my head. I definitely like now, the nice thing about writing is that you can write with someone in mind and be like, this person I want to act across from. So like, you know, I really liked what Barbara Crampton's been doing lately. And I met her and I was like, oh my God, I'm going to write something for her. So like, I have a web series and I'm like trying to write something for her. And like, you know, just like a lot of people like that, who I feel like I watched, you know, when I was younger, I want to work with now. Especially if I can like help create something for them, that would be really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a big resurgence on Barbara Crampton. It's just, it's awesome. Nice to see.
Yeah.
I mean, she never really went away, but she is coming heavy back in to horror films. And I love that because I grew up watching her and
she's awesome. And she's super cool as hell, like in person. And so it's like, yeah, I mean, she's really charming and really beautiful in real life too. So it's like, yeah, of course people are hiring her. Like I would hire her in a heartbeat.
Oh yeah, totally.
That's it.
I was a little upset that she wasn't in, because she has that little spot, but she didn't say anything in Lords of Salem.
Oh
yeah.
She was in it, but it was like, God damn it. Why would you do that, Rob Zombie? Just have her turn around so we can like see her face.
Yeah. I kept looking at like the cast. I was like, where the hell is Barbara Crampton? You know, what the heck?
Well, it's the same thing. Like even Richard Lynch, Michael Berryman, Tom Towles, like all those guys, you saw them for a split second, and it's like,
that's whatever. Shame. All right, are you? Yeah. You're bringing me down, Brad.
No, dude, I supported the shit out of Wars of Salem. I loved it. I was one of the only ones that really stuck up for that.
Yeah.
Shit.
It's actually a great flick. I really like it.
How was it working with Rob Zombie, by the way? Yeah, because you worked on Halloween too.
I did work on Halloween too. It was good. It was good. He's a really nice guy. He's like super nice, super chill, like super involved in everything he does, and like really supports. Like he really supports his actors, and like lets us like improvise and like kind of do, you know, whatever. Like kind of take everything to whatever level we want to take it to. So he was really cool. I really liked working with him.
Yeah, it was because I can't remember your character's name, but you're first introduced like into the is the record store.
Yeah, it was a record store. Yeah.
Yeah, and that was because that's when I was like, is that Bria Grant? What is she doing in Halloween 2? You know. And, but then you know, of course, you're in a lot of horror films, so it kind of clicked. I just didn't expect it.
Yeah, that was like my first job right after Heroes. I went like straight from Heroes to going to do that movie in Atlanta. But yeah, it was really fun. I really liked working with him. I think he's like a really cool, chill dude and would totally work for him again. He's like great to work for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a fan. Well, let's go ahead and size up the disc here, the Blu-ray, the visuals.
Special features.
The transfer. First of all, the transfer. I thought transfer looked great.
I'm trying to help you here, Sean.
Yeah. the transfer looks fantastic. And, you know, the thing is, this was the first time I ever saw the movie, so I have nothing at all to compare it to. What did you guys think of how it looked when you saw it on Blu-ray?
I mean, it was good. I mean, it was nothing. I don't think it really stands out.
Yeah.
The sound does. The sound's really good. As far as the look, I mean, it looks okay. I mean, I had the DVD from was it MGM or whatever. It looks better. It's probably the best it's ever looked. But is I don't think anything really stands out aside from the sound.
Let's jump into the bonus features because this disc is stacked. This has three audio commentaries. The first one with the writer-director Tom Eberhardt. Second one, the one that I watched or listened to, was one with Kelly Maroney and Catherine Mary Stewart. And then there's one with the production designer, John Muto.
Mm.
And then there's some interviews with Kelly Maroney and Kathy Mary Stewart.
Yeah, it's like all new material, yeah. Too. I don't think they pulled too much over from MGM archives on that one.
No, I think it's all new and all the interviews and everything. I can't remember, you know, how long these are or how much time it takes up. But
I don't remember them being very long. They're very short.
Yeah, but they're very fun. I mean, it's always nice to see new material on these, you know, people now, like, hearing them reminisce about the movie. So I would definitely give high points on the bonus features and give Scream Factory some major kudos to all the work
that they
did.
They put some nice stuff together on there.
So this one, I mean, I definitely recommend people pick this one up for sure. Did you keep the new artwork that they created, or did you do the flip around this one? Because I actually kind of like the new artwork that they did.
Doesn't matter. Flip.
Doesn't matter. Okay.
Right. Yeah, it's got to be that thing where I was in the video store when I was like 7. The new artwork's cool, but no, I like the old stuff.
Yeah. This is one of the new ones that actually, you know, I thought really they did a bang up job on it. Some of them are hit or miss. Like when we talked to The Howling, I didn't mention it, but I don't. That's one of them I don't like. I don't like the new key art that they did for The Howling, but this one I liked. So
I'm glad you did, Sean. Yeah. I'm glad that you enjoyed it.
All right. Well, I think that's going to do it. We're running out of time here, for Night of the Comet. I definitely, if you haven't seen it, I would definitely recommend you check it out. And, it's, if you're expecting, you know, like an 80s zombie movie, it's not 100% what you're expecting, but, I think you'll have fun with it. So I think it's definitely worth checking out.
For sure.
I agree.
All right. Well, Bria Grant, thank you so much for taking your time out of your evening and talking to us. Is there anything we should be paying attention to as far as anything that's coming down the road movie-wise or...
In the Bria Grant experience.
Mm-hmm. In the Bria Grant experience? Mm-hmm. I think people should just go and subscribe to Mystic Party ASAP.
There you go.
And it would make me very happy.
Okay. And people can also follow you on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
If they're into the Twitters. What's your Twitter handle?
At Bria Grant.
There you go.
Yeah.
You can follow the show on Twitter, Scream_cast. You can find us on the internet at thescreamcast.com. And you can find us on iTunes and Stitcher, and we would love it if you would leave a little review on how you like the show.
And also leave a review on Mystic Party.
Yeah. Reviews.
There you go.
Review everything.
And, well, of course, Bria will know if you're going to leave a review or not. So
yeah, I already know. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah.
Brad, where can people find you on the interwebs?
Oh, I guess they could find me at Brad F. Henderson.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
You can find Brad writing for PopShifter.com.
PopShifter. Correct,
and
yes.
You may find a few articles and reviews from me over at PopSyn.com or PopSyndicate.com. But type
I like
PopSyn.
PopSyn. It makes it sound dirty.
Definitely. I like it. I like it a lot better. Well, that's going to do it for this week's show. I want to thank all of you for listening. And we'll talk to all of you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, don't tell me you're leaving. The party's just begun.